You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of the Absent Minded Top 25 Under 25 for this year. It has been an enormous pleasure to guide you through these episodes, and for this final, I am joined by none other than Matt Drake of Bottom 6 Minutes fame.
Yes, and we're getting real close to having more Bottom 6 Minutes soon.
Yeah, you were going to do the Bottom 6 Minutes for the prospect game and for the warm-up games as well, Matt, aren't you?
Yeah, as soon as they get to the rookie tournament, I'm going to record some for those. I feel like I think the Habs are going to have so many players available at this one. There should be a lot for us to talk about in those games.
And of course, after an interesting Classico in Sweden with Malmö and Gothenburg, where Anton and I still talk about to each other because it ended in a draw, Anton, it was an amazing atmosphere and it was an actually very good game.
Yeah, it was. It was lovely to be there at the stadium, and I was sitting next to two guys from Gothenburg, so I got to hear about all the things that Malmö did bad, and I got to tell them all that was wrong with Gothenburg, my birth city. So it was wonderful, but let's talk some hockey instead.
Yeah, let's go with that, because no one really cares about Swedish football outside Sweden. We are here to do a new feature. Then when you listen to this, the article will have been published, but we're putting together an all-star team for the top 25 under 25, where we take the top player and put them in a sort of same position as they should be. And by that case, we get about, 12, 18, 19, 21 names to go with that. So, of course, some people will be left out, but on the other hand, we'll have a really good lineup and maybe a lineup that we can look at a couple of years down the line and see who stayed and who didn't. For our first line, Matt, we got Caulfield, Suzuki, and in Dach on the wing. This could be a potential opening night first line for Montreal Canadiens.
It absolutely could. I mean, they used that last year. I think that was probably, I think most people would agree anyways, was the most successful version of the top line that they had, was when Dach was on that wing. Now, they moved him off before Caulfield even got hurt out of necessity. They needed centers elsewhere in the lineup. So I think this year, if they can stay a little bit healthier, this could be an option that they could look at more consistently. I think Caulfield, Suzuki, they need a little bit of size in that other wing. They need somebody that can kind of dig pucks out in the corners, and Dach provides that. I'm not sure if it's the ideal thing for them to run regularly this season, but I would not even be slightly surprised if it ends up being the opening night top line, because they know it works, right? They know that there's some chemistry there, and they know that they can create offensively, and they know that Dach provides something that the other two need. So yeah, I wouldn't be even the slightest bit surprised if they run that on night number one.
That's a line with a lot of hockey IQ, Anton. Do you agree with Matt?
Considering how it looked last season, we want the newly signed Cole Caulfield to be Nick Suzuki's first mate for the foreseeable future. And as Matt was saying, Kirby Dach adds a lot of interesting elements to that line. He took a lot of great steps last season, and if he can build on that, whether it be through the middle or as a winger, as he adds both size and secondary scoring ability. So I think he would complement a 5'7 Suzuki and a 5'10, 5'11, 5'7 Caulfield and a 5'11 Suzuki quite well.
5'11 Caulfield would be fun if he just magically became 5'11.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it would be fun if Nick Suzuki suddenly was 5'7 as well.
What we can see here is also Dach maybe taking, in that case, a little bit more of a defensive responsibility. Is that really to utilize his strength to the best of the team's interest, obviously, but the best to Dach's interest, maybe?
I mean, he's going to have some defensive responsibility if he's playing in the middle as well. Even if you bump him down and he's second or even third line center, there's going to be a measure of defensive responsibility that he's going to have to show in order to stay at that position. If anything, if the team is more worried about his defensive abilities, they might be best served keeping him on the wing, putting him on that trio with Caulfield and Suzuki, and their job would be very similar to what it was last year, which is just go out there and create offense. if they're not worried, if they do think that he can handle a little bit more defensive responsibility, I would suggest keeping him at center in that case.
Looking at a second line in this case would be Slav, Kovsky, Newhook, and Roy. I mean, I know you want Roy on the top line, Matt, but that's a pretty decent line anyway.
It is a pretty decent line. I think Newhook at center is a little bit awkward. I might advocate for bumping him up and putting Doc as the center on that second line. But that being said, we know that he can play center. Juraj Slafkovský, I'm not sure. I think they tried a number of different configurations with him last year, and I'm not sure what's going to work best. This could be something that works. Those are two players he's never had a chance to play with before, so it'd be a breath of fresh air, so to speak, give him a chance to play with people that he's never played with before, and maybe that gets him going. I mean, Joshua Roy is one of the best playmakers that we've ever seen coming out of the QMJHL. He can find players all over the place. If Slafkovský can just, you know, get to those high percentage areas, Joshua Roy will find him. And I think that could be something that really gets him going. And he's somebody that the Habs need to get going. They didn't draft him first overall to have him play in the bottom six like he was at a number of times last year. So I think that they need to look for something like that. They need to look for something like what we've got in this All-Star team here, where he can get the right kind of players to facilitate him having some progression and being able to play in that top six.
Yeah, obviously you're also playing him for the future, right? So you want to make him develop into that kind of first line, well, at least top six guy who can be a force down the wing for a number of years. We've seen Josh Anderson really come to his own as a 28-year-old now. If Slav can become Josh Anderson plus 8-9 years earlier, that would be great for the future. And you don't develop him properly by just giving him fourth line, third line minutes. You need to give him an offensive role where he can really shine, because we've seen, especially with Slovakia at the international stage, that he can be a real force in a senior setting with high quality opponents. He just needs the chance to prove it on a night to night basis. Obviously, it's not easy coming into a league where you have to play 82 games per season. It's a big step up for an 18-year-old. And there's a reason why so few 18-year-olds come out of the gate flying as rookies.
Yeah.
Slav's big strength is not only that he's big, but also he's shot. And as Matt points out, Roy might be the guy to set that up. But is that really the best use of Newhook? We know he's played center in Avalanche, but he hasn't really shined on that in that position. We will talk about this later, but it's still a little bit of just taking the top players of the top 25 under 25 and putting them in order onto a lineup. It's still not ideal to get the positions right in this case, and especially maybe with Newhook as a center.
Newhook, it sounds to me from what they've said anyways that they want to use him on the wing. They've said quite clearly that they're going to give him top six opportunities. But based on what they've said, it kind of sounds like that's going to be on the wing. So there's one of two options, right? Either Doc would hypothetically come down center that second line and you just move Newhook over to the right wing and they could play Slav with Doc and Newhook. Or Newhook gets an opportunity with Caulfield and Suzuki, which I think they're going to try that at some point this season. It's going to be a trial and error process to figure out who that third is for Caulfield and Suzuki, because they've tried almost everybody. You mentioned Anderson, they've tried him there. He works in spurts, but he doesn't work consistently enough to stay there regularly. They've tried Doc, but they've always needed Doc somewhere else in the lineup due to injuries. I think they should try Joshua Roy at some point if he does in fact play any games with the Montreal Canadiens, because I think he's got that profile, a little bit of size, ability to go into the corners and dig pucks out, and playmaking ability that would work with Caulfield and Suzuki. So because I think there's going to be that trial and error process, I think multiple people are going to get cycled through that top line with Caulfield and Suzuki, and Newhook would be best served on the wing. Now, that being said, it might make some sense to bring Doc down to that second line. I let him center it and put Newhook on the other side. I think that could work.
You could also put Slough up there and you have a the line that we all spoke about after the draft last year.
Yeah, and you could have Doc with Newhook and Roy. Basically, you could try that as well. But it's just they've acquired Alex Newhook for his talent. And we've seen what Martin Saint-Louis and his coaching staff can do with developing young players. We've also seen, for example, Kirby Doc a year ago come in and haven't really He didn't light it up in Chicago during the latter years, but put in the right setting, he was something completely different. And there is a possibility that Alex Newhook was mismanaged in Colorado as well. Colorado was going for the cup, and they weren't really thinking about prospect development at the same rate as the Habs are doing currently. So who knows? Alex Newhook may develop, may have some underlying talents that the management in Montreal has seen, and maybe they see a future for him as a centerman. At least he's played it. He has experience down the middle, and positional versatility is always great to have when injuries hit. So whether Alex Newhook will be down the middle or as a complementary player on the wing, I think he will add a lot going forward.
I got to bring it up real quick before we move on to if you did use Newhook and give him that chance in the top line, hypothetically here, again, we're probably talking about the future because Joshua Huet projects to start in Laval. If you had a line of Slavkovsky, Doc, and Joshua Huet, that's going to be a nightmare to deal with. That's three pretty big players. I mean, Huet is the smallest player of the three, and he's 6 feet tall and about 205. You're not going to have a fun time playing against that line. You got a couple of guys who can go in and bang in the corners. Slavkovsky needs to work on keeping his head up, but still, he's a big boy. Not fun to deal with when he's leaning on you in the corner. That's a heavy, you know, if you could get them to work a really good cycle, that could be a nightmare line to deal with.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Like, obviously, we're doing the top 25 all-star team now, but can you imagine a line with Kirby Doc, Juraj Slafkovský, and Josh Anderson?
Yeah,
that would be big. That would be properly
same
big.
Thing. That's a big, heavy line that you know they can skate pretty fast, and you're really not going to want to get caught in a cycle by those guys if you can structure it right. Which I think Martin Saint-Louis has shown that he's got the ability to be a little bit flexible with how he uses his lines. Not necessarily playing in that system, but like you said, just having specific, you know, triggers of where he wants people to go based on how the play is developing. Those three guys, that's a huge, heavy line to deal with.
Yeah.
As Anton mentioned, as I mentioned, as Matt probably has mentioned as well, but I don't keep tab on everything Matt says because it's all so smart. This is the top 25, under 25 all-star team. It's not the projection of lines, but you can see the first at least five names, but maybe even Roy in some ways getting a chance down the line for these two top lines. But the rest of the lines are really prospects, and they are not knocking on the door to the same degree. You got Raphael Harvey-Pinard.
Well, Harvey Beck. Pinard, sorry, but Harvey Pinard is knocking on the door.
Yeah, well, yeah. But with the trades that has happened, he's probably knocking on the door, but he's also one that can be sent down to Laval.
Yeah, he can absolutely.
But he may have kicked that door in last year. At this point with how he played, I mean, he was pretty effective even in minutes with Nick Suzuki on the top line. Yeah. And when I was writing the profile for Nick Suzuki, one of the things I did was went to Puck IQ and I pulled like their QOC numbers, quality of competition. You could see that the only person who was playing more or almost the same amount against elite competition as Nick Suzuki was Raphael Harvey-Pinard. So Raphael Harvey-Pinard comes up, gets his first taste of NHL action, and it was out of the frying pan into the fire. It's like, you're going to be against the top line every night. And he did fantastically.
We got that line with Pinard, Beck, and Farrell. All three of them had games with Montreal last year. It's still a line for the future, I think. It's an interesting line, though. And it is what we have predicted in many ways with Beck as a center, maybe on topping out on the third, second line.
It is, because RHP gives you that, you know, that constant, you know, Brendan Gallagher style, you know, bottomless gas tank effort, forechecking, goes to the net. Owen Beck gives you a lot of defensive responsibility with some offensive upside that appears to be kind of still untapped at this point. And Farrell, you know, he's good pretty much everywhere in the ice. He's got a great 200-foot game, maybe lacking a little bit in terms of size, but certainly makes up for it in terms of hockey IQ and ability to drive play. Like you said, I think this is more of something for the future. RHP, I think he has a shot at potentially even being another name that might get consideration to be on the top line with Coffey and Suzuki at some point. Like we said, you know, he's definitely knocking on the door. If not, he's already broken that door down and he's ready to really take a spot in the NHL permanently. But that's a line that you absolutely could be looking at in the future. I don't think that anything is set in stone, even for this year, let alone 2-3 years down the road. So it's entirely possible you could see a line like that, you know, maybe a few years down the road from now.
Yeah, it's not, if we just think back a couple of years, Montreal had a first line consisting of Philippe Dano flanked by Brendan Gallagher and Tomáš Tatar. It's not completely different from that one with Owen Beck taking the Dano part, but we always said about Philippe Dano as well that he would be best suited if he was a really, like, on a top heavy team, on a good playoff team, he would be really great as a third line center. If you have Owen Beck coming into that sort of position, and then you have Raphaël Harvey-Pinal, who in many ways have similar aspects to his game that as Brendan Gallagher, then all you need is someone who can actually, you know, provide the passes for Harvey-Pinal and as a secondary scorer, and you have a pretty interesting line there.
It's an interesting line in that regard, and it's also an upgrade about, you know, you mentioned going back a few years, but I'm thinking David Dachaner, and Beck is a bit of an upgrade on him as well, even if he had a very successful hockey career.
Dernay, I think, was a little bit more offensive-minded. Now, you could make the argument that, you know, getting stapled to Max Pacioretty for so long definitely benefited him quite a bit in terms of his offensive numbers. But I would say Beck is certainly an upgrade defensively. Beck really chokes off the neutral zone. He makes it very difficult, particularly in junior, for anybody to get anything done against him. The offensive numbers do leave something to be desired, but I think he's best suited this year going back to junior for one more year. He'll get a chance as well to probably play a significant role for Team Canada at the World Juniors. And I think that's best for his development, is to give him that opportunity, because if they keep him, they can't send him down to Laval, of course. So I think the most we're going to see from Beck is maybe he gets a few games at the start of the season before they send him back to junior, but that's where he's best served. And he can continue working on that, and maybe he can bring that offense up to a point where maybe he can have some more Dernay-esque numbers once he's ready to go.
Okay, looking at the fourth line, that would be Kidney, Machar, and Ilonen. One up-and-coming player that really hasn't been liked by the community and has gone under the radar after the draft last year. Kidney, that was up in Montreal. And Ilonen, that has never really stuck in Montreal. It's a weird line, because it's the future, it's the present, it's maybe even, in Ilonen's case, the past.
This is a line you might actually see in Laval this year. I legitimately think that there's a possibility that you see at least two of these players playing together at some point. I think probably if you were going to do it, I think Kidney would be the center in that case over Meshar. I can't be certain about that. That's just a feeling. I think we have him listed as the center here, but I think Kidney would probably be the guy in the middle there. But you could legitimately see these three players playing together in Laval. This is an entirely possible configuration. Now, that being said, you know, Ilonen, I think, has a chance of potentially earning himself a spot with the Habs. He's been around for a while. We've seen what he can do in Laval, and he could definitely help the Montreal Canadiens power play that was pretty brutal last year. So I think he'll get a significant look at camp. But if he does end up starting the year in Laval, I really think you could see those three together.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting with Jesse Ilonen, because it always feels like he's been kind of, he's never taken the center stage. He's always been kind of an afterthought. But whenever he's been, well, here in North America, he's always performed better than expected. He has a great skating, and he can add some secondary scoring. And he hasn't looked out of place when he's been up in the NHL. So it's a huge addition for Laval if he starts the season there. Otherwise, I think he will do really well in a bottom six role with the Montreal Canadiens as a complementary player. But, you know, he adds some of that Paul Byron-esque speed down the wing, and he's a smart player. So as Matt said, he adds something on the power play as well, which is something that Montreal needs dearly. So Kidney and Machar, huge first seasons for them playing pro hockey. It will be super interesting to follow them among a lot of other players in Laval and see what Jean-François Houle can do with their development, because it's a big step from the OHL to the or the Q to the AHL. But we saw a player like William Trudeau come in and perform really well in Laval last year. So it's up to them to grab the opportunity.
Obviously, we're speaking about, you know, what is about to happen in about a month's time. But we're also looking at this from the top 25, under 25 aspect. Are you guys surprised by any of the names on an all-star team like this? Is there anyone you thought would be in it when you think back?
No, I'm not surprised by any of these names because they were the top 12 forwards voted for. And I agree with that.
I was kind of surprised that Emil Heinemann didn't sneak his way in there. I mean, we saw what he did last year in Laval. The guy was just scoring left, right, and center. I thought that, and I think this is not a knock against him, that he fell a little bit and ended up at 21 on the top 25 under 25. I think that was more a product of the really strong group around him. But I thought, you know, the scoring rate that he had might have been enough to push him a little bit further up, and then maybe he would have cracked that all-star lineup there.
The knock on his scoring rate was also that he scored with, what, 25% of his shots at one point. So, yeah. We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
Looking at the defense, Gula Reinbacher, though, could be a potential first pairing for Montreal sooner rather than later.
It could, absolutely. I still think that they would both benefit from having a more an alternative beside them who is more mobile, maybe. Like, they are both really good skaters, but just someone who can complement them rather than do well. I kind of feel like they would be stepping on each other's toes a little bit, so having those two anchor each a top four, one of the top two defensive pairings would be great. Here, obviously, they were the highest rated defensemen for a reason. Well, if you look at size, at least Gouli being left-sided and Reinbacher being right-sided. But yeah, Reinbacher, fifth overall pedigree, Gouli already looking like a pro NHLer when he's out there, if he can only stay healthy. Yeah, super interesting players, both of them.
Yeah, I mean, Gouli had to go from, you know, a WHL schedule to top 4 minutes in the NHL. And I talked about the QOC numbers when I was on the Nick Suzuki profile. I mean, the same thing looking at defensemen. It was basically David Savard playing the most against elite players, and then it was Gouli right behind him. And I think that played into him getting injured, was having to go to that much tougher schedule. And not only having to go to a much tougher schedule, but going right to the top of the heap. I mean, he had that one game against the Penguins where he was basically stapled to Sidney Crosby's line for the entire game. And he did really well in that game, actually. It was kind of eye-opening to see how well he could do against such a, you know, an elite group of players against him. He's capable of playing those minutes right now. Reinbacher, I think the team's plan seems to be let him go back to Switzerland, finish his school, which Patrick's mentioned a number of times that he's been very clear that he wants to finish school before he makes a jump to North America and starts playing pro hockey there. So I'd give him that one more year, and I would put Justin Barron on Gouli's other side. I think that works really well, and then you get the opportunity to I'll let Patrick tell you who the second pair would be, and then we can talk about why I think Reinbacher is better on that one.
Second pairing, to no one's surprise, it's really one of them you already mentioned. It's Barron and the other one is Hudson. I think it would be a great pairing to watch. I don't think defense would be their strong suit, though. Fantastic. But I can see, and talking about moving Reinbacher down and Barron up in order to maybe facilitate a better composed team. But these are really, when you're looking at the list, they are the top four defensive prospect. And I can honestly say that I think Barron might be forgotten in this case.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, I think Justin Barron is a little bit forgotten. He still has the pedigree of being a first-round caliber prospect who was acquired in a trade, and I still think that he's growing as a player. I think that he looked quite good when he came up to the NHL compared to his first season. I think that it was great for him to start in Laval last year, and it made him grow into his role much more, and that he was able to continue on his good form when he came up from Laval to Montreal and actually add a little something as both on the power play and as a defensive player. I think that Justin Barron will be Yeah, at least he will be an NHL player going forward, and it's up to him to continue to develop. He's only, what, is he still only 22, or how old is he?
23, 22, something like that. He's not aging out next year anyway. That's what I'm sure about.
I don't think he's forgotten. I think he was in danger of being that kind of forgotten guy at the beginning of last year because he struggled a little bit even in Laval. But you see the trajectory, how much better he got throughout the year. And then once he came up to the Habs, he continued getting better on the Montreal Canadiens. And Pat, you touched on it, and I think that's super important. If you had a Hudson-Barron pairing, yeah, they're going to struggle defensively for sure. But if you flip that, right, if you put Gouley with Barron, Hudson with Reinbacher, I don't think either of those pairings struggle defensively. Caden Gouley is very good as a shutdown player. He's also got offensive potential. We saw that last year. And putting him with Barron, I think that's a killer pairing. I think that could work. I think it's something that they absolutely have to try this year because Gouley with David Savard last year, it was rough. It was an offensive black hole. They were playing against very good competition, but it just didn't work. So I don't want to see that again at all. I'd rather see David Savard playing with maybe with Mike Matheson to start the season. And I'd like to see Barron with Gouley right out the jump on opening night. That's what I'd like to see as a pairing. And then the Hudson Reinbacher one, again, very similarly, I think Reinbacher can kind of play the Gouley to Barron's Hudson and help that pairing be a little bit more responsible defensively while still being very threatening on the offensive side, because it's two players that, you know, we saw their chemistry together at the development camp. I think it's something that they need to continue exploring. And in the future, they might be able to run that pairing on the Habs. So then you have two pairings who have some offensive potential, but also they've got, you know, that good balance between the two. So they're going to be able to play in their own zone. They're going to be able to play against the rush too.
Looking at the third pairing, we have Harris, who is knocking on that door a little bit. But on the other hand, we have Adam Engström, who's grown tall and big over the summer. A very interesting pairing. I think that could actually also work in the NHL in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
Engström, he will have a bigger role with the team, but also he's been not locked down as a defender on either side just yet. They keep switching him depending on what the team needs and which pairing he's going to play with. Very, very interesting. The season starts in 10 days, more or less, in Sweden. So you'll get some SHL games before the NHL starts, along with training camp before that. Any thoughts on that pairing, Anton?
Well, Jordan Harris is also kind of, we've talked about that before, that he's kind of a forgotten man as well. He performed very well when you look at advanced metrics and everything on a struggling Habs team last season. And although not being as physically imposing as Caden Gouley or David Reinbacher, I still think he can be a guy who can let someone else flourish offensively beside him. So I think that a pairing of him and Adam Engström would actually look quite good. I think that Harris is the kind of guy that you need as a... He's also someone who can add a little bit of offense, but mainly he's a reliable guy who you can... Yeah, who can really make other more offensively gifted players feel comfortable and to play their best game. So Harris is kind of an unsung hero, and I think he would be he's one of those players who would probably he would not look out of place on a second pairing, but he would look really great on a third pairing, and he's one of the guys who I think will, if the Habs become what we hope as a perennial playoff team, I think that he could be a great add just to have as a third pairing anchor, basically.
Engström was very impressive at Dev Camp as well. I got to note that because, I mean, I think everybody was focused on the chemistry between Hudson and Reinbacher, but Engström looked really good. One more year in the SHL, I think he could be absolutely knocking on the door, similar to Harris. And Harris, for his part, he was quite good for the Habs, like quietly good because he didn't have great offensive numbers or anything, but quietly good for the Habs last year. And I think he's going to be on his way to earning a roster spot this year.
Yeah, and Harris, you say quietly good because you didn't see him make these huge errors either in any of the games.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes that's key, right? Sometimes the best thing you can say, especially on a team as bad as the Habs were last year, you know, they're a bottom five team, right? If you're not seeing the glaring errors, if you're not noticing him at all, that means he's probably doing all right because you'd be noticing those big errors.
Yeah, you can't only have players who are electrifying on your lineup. Like Lane Hudson is an electrifying player. We talked about, we've talked about, you know, Cole Caulfields and all that. We'll get to guys like Logan Mayhew in a minute. That's also like, they have that electrifying potential, but you need these kind of like safe, boring players as well who can make the others actually flourish. And I think Jordan Harris could be that kind of guy.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mayhew, and he is the seventh defender on this roster. The thought process with Mayhew is really two ways. Either he's coming in and being your first overall defender in for ages to come, or he becomes a power play specialist.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. But you know what? Now you mentioned power play specialist. The Habs could really use a few power play specialists with how bad they've been.
Hey, they have Chris Weidman is there, so it's no problem.
Chris Weidman. All right. Well, if he's the power play specialist, I'm going to go ahead and just hibernate for the next couple of years until he's not.
Yeah, and we have joked about the power kill for since you and I started arguing about prospects match. So that's, what, 2 years going down now, right?
It's been a while. It's been a while. When's the last time that the Habs had an effective power play? I think in spurts with PK Subban out there. In spurts with Shea Weber at times, just because he had that elite shot. Really, the last time I think they had a lethal power play was the Sheldon Surrey years.
At least where you could count on it to be good all the time. Mayhew, though, we mentioned it in the podcast with Brock Orton, hasn't really been helped by the defensive structure for the Knights. And it'd be interesting to see what he can achieve in the AHL this year. Looking at the goalies, there are two unsung heroes and two unknown heroes, really, because Fowler and Dobish are the two goalies in this all-star team. And it's also an interesting selection because Primo has fallen off.
Yeah. Look, there's always some of those players in the top 25, under 25. We've seen it. We saw it also this year with Matthias Norlander. You can fall off pretty quick if you don't do enough to hold on to your spot or to advance. And I think that's kind of the problem with Caden Primeau is, you know, he just hasn't done enough in Laval. He had a good playoff run. One good playoff run, unfortunately, in the AHL is not enough. And we look at last year, he was fine. Was he good enough to hold on to his spot? No. I was a little bit surprised that Fowler ended up ahead of Dobish. I thought, you know, Dobish is going to get a legitimate chance this year to really run the show in Laval. I think he's going to be the number one and Primo's going to be number two. So he's going to get an opportunity to prove to everybody what he can do. It should be pretty exciting to see him. I don't know enough about Fowler, honestly. I haven't actually seen him play personally. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with Boston College this year. He's got good numbers in the USHL. So look, this is still part of that. It's going to be a long process looking for the next Carey Price. And they may not find the next Carey Price, but it's who can be the closest to what Carey Price was at his peak.
Yeah, obviously, like looking at this goalie lineup, it's a lot of hope, mainly. We don't know what Jacob Fowler or Jakub Dobish could be at a professional level yet. The main reason why Caden Primeau isn't there is that people have sort of given up on him as being the future first choice netminder for the Habs. Perhaps he can grow into something like a Samuel Montembeau if he continues to, you know, if he takes a few steps forward, because we've seen Montembeau come into Montreal as a waiver wire pickup, basically, and as a 24-year-old, and he has really grown. So all hope shouldn't be lost on Caden Primeau, and I still think that he deserves a place on this All-Star team. I still think that he should be ahead of Fowler and Dobish as of presently. But then I also agree that I think that we probably know just about what we have with him. But with Fowler and Dobish, we still hope for one of them to turn into the second coming of Carey Price another Habs legend.
I want to mention, because I don't think Chris Peters got enough credit for it, but in the podcast about the draft, I think we Fresh Prince of Montreal, I think I call it, because we're talking obviously about Will Smith. He predicted that Fowler would be one of the top goalies out of the draft, and he had some really, really good things to say about him. I think partly is obviously me ranking Primo at what, 51 or something like that, because I completely gave up on him. But Fowler is also the new toy syndrome. It's something fun. It's also the box syndrome. He can be anything. He can be Carey Price, but he can also be, you know, the next Primo. So you don't know, and you're ranking from maybe your hope, as Anton says, or the mystery box that we all agree upon.
How often does anybody really get goalies right?
You know? It's voodoo, like, you know. We know that.
Even when the Habs drafted Carey Price fifth overall, there was a lot of people looking at you, Pierre McGuire, who didn't like that pick at all. I still remember the day when it happened. I was at Cupola Sports in Niagara Falls. I was getting fitted for my new skates. I was going back to AAA that year, and I stood up and celebrated because I was so happy they picked Carey Price. My dad was sitting there, and he's like, "What are they doing?" My dad was pissed. He didn't think they needed
a goal. We also have all those players or all those people that were saying that we should trade Carey Price after Halak's fantastic run in the 2010 playoffs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of what you said about, like, you can never know about goalies, like the year before Montreal selected Carey Price, the New York Rangers selected Al Montoya sixth overall. So yeah. Al Montoya obviously didn't work out. We all know about Rick DiPietro and his infamous contract, for example. And then just 3 years after Rick DiPietro, the Penguins selected Marc-André Fleury, who, like, looks like a Hall of Famer for sure. So you never know.
And the Rangers picked another Hall of Famer in the seventh round.
Yeah, it could be Henrik Lundqvist, who, you know, comes out of nowhere. Montreal selected three goalies in this draft, and we have no idea who is the most, who will be the best goalie in 5 years' time.
They take the longest to develop. They take the longest to develop. Yeah. So you pick them and you work on it. And like, honestly, the fact that you had somebody early in the draft means nothing.
No.
All right. The one question that we have touched upon, and I just want you both to give a reason to keep Dach on the wing and another reason to keep Dach in the center to finish off this podcast. And let's start with you, Anton.
Yeah, the main reason is that quality centers who have both skill and size are difficult to come by. And if you have such an opportunity in Kirby Dach, it may be worth sacrificing him as a complementary player on the first line with Caulfield and Suzuki. And still, even if he were to be 5% better in the winger spot next to Suzuki, it would still be worth to have a really good second line center if he can be that. Sacrificing a little bit of offensive potential, perhaps, but still having someone who can anchor a second line for years to come. Montreal currently... And they bet a little bit of draft, draft capital on Christian Dvorak, for example, when Kotkaniemi left. It hasn't really worked out as they were hoping. So Montreal's still looking for that long-term solution as Suzuki's second, the guy who's going to anchor the second line, basically. Owen Beck could also be that guy going forward if he keeps developing, especially his offense, but Kirby Dach looks like the best solution as a present.
Matt, a counter on that?
Look, I got to sit on the fence a little bit because I'm not 100% sold either way. I think if you're looking at putting him on the wing, what's the main reason why you would want to do that? Well, because he's the only guy who appears to be able to work consistently with Caulfield and Suzuki based on all of the options that they've tried so far. Again, they've tried Josh Anderson. It works in small samples. It does not work consistently. Rafael Harvey-Pinon looked okay with Nick Suzuki during the season, but that was after Caulfield was hurt. We have no idea if he works with Caulfield over there as well. And that would be a pretty small line that could hypothetically get pushed around by bigger players. We just don't know who works there other than Dach. Dach is the one guy that appears to work pretty consistently with those two. And they also had a pretty small sample size last year. So who knows, over a longer sample, maybe he's the absolute best option that they have to play on that other wing. Now, to the other side of the fence, because again, I'm going to sit on the fence here. I agree with what Anton said. Having a really good, you know, big body second line center is a desirable thing to have. He could potentially be a really effective 1B to Suzuki's 1A. And if you have that kind of a configuration, instead of having a clear number one, a clear number two, you got a 1A and a 1B, and you can run them against anybody that you want. That is invaluable as this team gets to the other side of the rebuild and starts looking to get back to competing, because you're running two very good lines. And then all you got to do is hope that Owen Beck can ascend to that, you know, really good defensive third line center role. And all of a sudden you got three lines deep that you can run anytime you want. And you could be a problem for almost any team in the NHL with that kind of a configuration. So that would be a desirable reason to leave him at center. And again, if he's the only guy that works with Caulfield and Suzuki, that's your main reason to keep him on the top line on the wing.
There you have it. You've been listening to the top 25, under 25. I think it's about 30 episodes. We so appreciate you listening. We're so appreciative of you leaving comments on you promoting us on other websites, or leave a comment or a rating on your podcast platform. Everything is appreciated. We thank you so much, and we're all looking forward to the real season.